The Alliance of American Football kicked off this weekend, and people actually watched it. The opener drew 2.9 million viewers between 9 and 11 Eastern Time. The NBA on ABC over that same stretch drew 2.524 million. My question for you, too, are you going to actually watch this thing again?
I will watch it again. I don't know if I'll watch it preferentially over the NBA, especially when the Rockets are playing. And I think that's obviously a... That was obviously just the buzz of the first week of it. I don't think that ultimately it's going to be more popular than the NBA. But, it wasn't a bad quality of play. I'm looking over some of the standout performers from the week. Akeem Hunt, a guy we liked when he was here in Houston, he averaged 7.1 yards per carry.
That's not surprising.
Rushing in the AAF. Like, these are names you know. I think over time you'll start to see more names that you know. They're kind of... It looks like they're probably going to end up being absorbed by the NFL in some respects. I feel like the NFL wants them to be their minor league. And like, how many minor league Astros games do I watch? Not that many, but a harder sell than not watching action on a football field.
I guess you might watch a minor league game if it happened to be an option, which is usually not on your TV. I mean, I'm just saying hypothetically, like, because those games aren't on.
Well, that's
if you knew that, let's say, a top prospect was pitching or playing, you might possibly.
If Forrest Whitley's pitching, I'd think about it.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at with this league. Paul asked the question: Are you gonna watch this again? I might tune in here and there, but my preferences will be the NBA and especially now a little bit of college basketball.
There was a lot of chatter on my Twitter timeline during the Rockets and Thunder game Saturday night about the AAF, and I had no desire to actually flip the channel from the Rockets and Thunder game, especially as the third quarter progressed and the Rockets blew a 26-point lead.
All right, this is where Mike, I think you're trying to be a snob about this. I think you in your mind, I think intellectually what you've said is like, well, no, I'm above this, so I'm not going to watch it. I think you're going to find yourself gravitating back more towards it, and this is why. This is why. Because unlike preseason football, these are guys who are playing on a team that's practicing together, like as units, and it's a better quality than the third or fourth game of a preseason. They're staying in the entire game, and yet there are also players out there that you'll want on your team eventually. You're watching some of these guys, and you're thinking, hey, wow, he'd look good as a Texan. He'd look good as a Jet. I think that element of it alone for a lot of NFL fans is going to be very enticing, especially since 31 teams in the league are coming off years in which they wish their team was just a little bit better. I predict you will watch at least three full quarters of AAF football this spring.
Full quarters?
Yes, three full quarters.
All right.
Here's where I'm at with the AAF. You know, if I go out on a weekend, I'm going to have drinks on a Friday and on a Saturday, but the rest of the week, I probably will not drink at all. I'm at about a Tuesday in terms of actually wanting to go back out on the town. I feel like I didn't get enough sleep. That's where I'm at because I had a lot of football. I don't necessarily need football back in my life right now. Now, that'll change in a couple of weeks. Like, I think the in-between of the NBA All-Star game and on top of that, the wait until March Madness, there's a void there. There is also a void, I think, in sports from June all the way through July once the NBA Finals are done. Going all the way up to training camp, and honestly, even in training camp until the actual preseason games start, I don't need football right now.
In a typical Rockets season, this wouldn't be an intriguing part of the season whatsoever. This year it is because of the circumstances. In your analogy, though, was there a point where the next morning you were like, oh, I'm never watching AAF again. I can't, oh, that's it. I'm swearing it off completely.
It's never that as much as it's tone it down a little bit, Paul. Did you really need to watch four AAF games this weekend, which apparently some people did?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I ever was quite there. The Rockets had a 26-point lead over the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday night with a minute 38 to play in the first half. They still lost to the Thunder 117-112. Paul George said of the Oklahoma City Thunder that even though they were down big at halftime, they felt they would get back in the game.
This team is competitive. That's what it comes down to. We knew it was another half of basketball left. We had to make some changes. But we knew, you know, this team was going to let us back in.
We knew this team was going to let us back in. Paul George just called the Rockets soft.
My biggest takeaway from this game was Oklahoma City is the better team. They are the better basketball team. They're better in the standings. They outscore people by 5.4 points per game on the season. The Rockets' number is 2.1. And the difference between last year and this year is Paul George is playing like a legit MVP candidate. He has been great this season. He had 45 points, and they have other guys playing better, like Ferguson, Jeremy Grant's developed into a nice player. That team, to me, right now, in contrast to each of the last 2 years, they are a better team than the Rockets.
They're a better team, especially without Clint Capella in the game. The third quarter didn't freak me out all that much, other than that you see that, wow, Oklahoma City is, like, they're longer, they're more physical without Clint Capella there. And when the Rockets aren't making their threes, and they also can't stop a damn possession to end their lives. What was the offensive rebounding in that game for Oklahoma City? They couldn't stop a damn Oklahoma City possession. They just kept getting chance after chance after chance. It's Clint Capella. Like, I hate to hang all this on Clint Capella, but at the same time, I feel like Clint Capella's kind of getting shade thrown at him by people who are acting like his absence isn't that big a deal. I see all these people saying, well, look, the Rockets clearly aren't as good as Oklahoma City Thunder. There's a reason you just gave Clint Capella $90 million. He's a pretty damn good basketball player. They just desperately need him back.
Right.
He's been doing some work on the side.
And Mike D'Antoni needs to figure out how to use Kenneth Faried and Nene in the meantime. And I'm still thinking he's trying to figure that out. I wanted to come away from this game with the takeaway that, hey, Chris Paul looked like Chris Paul down the stretch in this game, and that's a really good sign going forward. He had an unbelievable pass underneath the basket that made me think, okay, Chris Paul actually can be the Chris Paul that we remember if the playoffs come around and he's still healthy at that point. But to Mike's point, yeah, you're on the same level as the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Warriors are a step ahead of you. When you get Clint Capella back, I suppose you take a step ahead of the Thunder, but how close to Golden State are you? That's the depressing reality.
I don't like that Paul George is playing like an MVP because
playoff P.
Well, and
his 38 nicknames that he's given to himself.
Like James, look, James Harden is not on a good basketball, like not on one of the best basketball teams in the conference right now. And as Mike has pointed out many times, usually the MVP goes to somebody who's one of the top couple teams in the conference. Right now, they clearly are not.
Yes.
And the 1 year now, Russell Westbrook set the tone for that you can be a fringe playoff team and win the MVP. But still, this is unsettling to me.
I have some major baseball news, guys. And as everyone knows, I am a huge, huge baseball guy and probably the voice of baseball in the city of
Houston.
Well,
it's pretty much fact.
So Saturday, I went to Walgreens to, you know, get some eye ointment for the surgery that I had to have on my eye on Friday, where they basically just scooped a bunch of cysts out of my eye. I know, disgusting. I saw Dallas Keuchel at this Walgreens. This means two things. First off, he's in Houston. Is he going to be a Houston Astro? Makes you think. Also, he is a Walgreens guy, not a CVS guy. 100%. These are the facts that you can only get from me, Paul.
That's
Mr. Baseball, MLB.com.
That's a racist take right there.
Racist?
Yeah, you drew a conclusion. It's not racist, but it's like rooted in the same things as racism.
Walgreens guy.
So I'm at a Walgreens once, so now he's a Walgreens guy.
He's a Walgreens guy, man.
I have to go, like, with our, you know, you should know better than anybody. Like, we have to go to CVS. Well, you might not know this yet because you don't have kids and everything. If you have a prescription for us, we have to go to CVS. Unless it's a long-term subscription prescription, like where you have to get it continually, then you have to go to Walgreens for that.
We are
a multiple drugstore health plan.
Oh, I thought we were Walgreens only now. I thought we had been switched because we used to be CVS only.
I think I'm CVS part of the time and then Walgreens part of the other time.
Oh, that's
maybe
confusing.
I messed it up. I don't know.
I'm not 100% sure either. But all I know is Dallas Keuchel is physically in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
Great sign.
Look, I know where he lives. He's got a sweet place.
Anyway,
do you make anything of the fact that he's in Houston?
No.
Great
sign.
If anything.
Huge.
Because he's staying here until he figures out where the hell he's going to live next year. He doesn't know where he's going to live next year. So there's that. Much less where he might supposed to be like a week from now.
He's refusing to visit other locations because he's staying in Houston. Paul Gallant, baseball guy, you heard it here first. 12th ranked. I can't read numbers. 12th ranked UH took down 25th ranked Cincinnati 65-58, improving to 23-1 yesterday. Paul Gallant was in attendance for this game at the Tillman Fertitta Center for the first time. I've got to say, that place, my big takeaway wasn't about UH, who is a really good basketball team. My big takeaway is there needs to be more arenas that have that intimacy factor that the Tillman Center had. It was loud. It was not 100% full, but it was really, really loud. And I just felt that everyone who was in attendance at that game had a very good view of everything that was taking place on the court. I understand it's not economically feasible to have arenas that are like that in basketball, but I really enjoyed the environment smaller that I watched this game.
Smaller and tighter. And, yeah, I don't know. It seems like that'll be the trend moving forward with a lot of sports, especially
as
the TV experience gets better. I like that a lot. The fact that you said that it wasn't full is interesting to me.
There are a couple of seats. I'm not going to say like it was empty, but it wasn't like a sellout considering it's two ranked teams. And how often do you get that in the AAC?
And they're going to be a top.
Was it not
10.
A sellout?
This will be the top 10. Well,
didn't look to be one. That's all I'm saying.
It could be a sellout without having 100% attendance.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like it should be that.
Well, I'm sure it was a sellout. It just wasn't a.
I would think it would be a sellout. Cincinnati in town, two top 25 teams. I would hope that would be a sellout.
It's also, look, when you go back to the last time they were ranked, which was back in the good old days. So it's been what, 20, is it 30 years now? No, that can't possibly be. It's college basketball is different, man. It's like how many of these guys are going to be NBA Hall of Famers, you know, compared to the glory days of U of H.
I'm totally on board with the intimate small arenas. These teams that play in these gargantuan stadiums or arenas, no matter what team you are, what level, it's usually a disaster if you're not extremely popular. So I like this trend. And clearly the building has been a huge deal for them.
It really has. And you know, for a comparison's sake, Josh Beard, who works here at Sports Radio 610, he wanted me to go to the Toyota Center tonight. And I was like, I'll pass. Like, you know, cause it's just not the same. It's too sprawled out. And honestly, I know that I'm probably going to have a seat where I don't have that same kind of view that you get at the Tillman Fertitta Center, the Fertitta Center. It's just a really good vibe. Also, you can
but it's also, it works out well for the U of H because it's like, if you had a 15,000 seats, yeah. it wouldn't look that
it
great.
It wouldn't look good. You can walk around that whole place in like 15 minutes.
It was very cool.
I like that.
I'm surprised. I enjoy sitting in the upper deck of a lot of things. And it's not like it's not like I don't prefer sitting down lower. I just enjoy being up that high. It's just a different atmosphere, and you get a better view of the entire court in a lot of ways. And you don't feel as attached to everything. Yeah, I don't like. And there's something about the appeal of just going and getting a really cheap seat. There's times where I would have gone to a game, especially when I was in college, obviously, where like there's no way in hell I would have gone to a game except that I could get like a $5 bleacher seat. You know, so that's appealing to me. I'd say I keep the large arenas.
Mike, Seth, and Paul, Mad Radio on a Monday. One of the big tasks in the offseason is going to be revamping and fixing and improving the Texans offensive line. Pro Football Focus has Nick Martin graded as the fifth best center in the NFL, which is a minor problem because there are only four
teams. AFC South, right.
Sorry, AFC South. That's what I meant. This is a minor problem because there are only four teams in the division, and he is ranked the fifth best center. This is because Ryan Kelly of the Colts missed some games, and his backup was rated higher.
I thought like four games into the season, Pro Football Focus had Nick Martin as the best center who ever lived.
Well, maybe he dropped off after that
point. They did. Look, you know, this is the Pro Football Focus rankings. You always have to take with a grain of salt, but it's worth noting that, yeah, usually if you've got a low grade, it typically isn't going that well for you. And we knew that it wasn't going that well for those guys at times. I don't know what to say at this point. Nick Martin is so far beyond where we expected him to be, you know, 2 years ago, if we were looking forward, that it's either that Nick Martin just doesn't want to be that good, or he's not getting coached that well, or the guys next to him don't know what the hell they're doing. Because there's too many times in, this has been the problem with the Texans offensive line for a long time now. They'll have stretches where they play pretty well, but then their bad plays are incredibly bad. It's like the one time you forget to wear a condom. It's a really big mistake. It's one mistake. Like, you might remember 99 times. That 100th time you forget.
It's a big deal.
Is a really, really big deal, potentially.
Always gotta have dog bags on.
These guys are out there getting Deshaun Watson pregnant four times a game. It's just, you can't keep making the big, big, big mistakes and getting beat really fast at times. The problem with Nick Martin and grading him too harshly is that it's always hard to tell exactly whether it's his fault or one of the guards' faults. There's just too many miscommunications where guys go completely unblocked when there are simple stunts and twists in the middle. And it really is difficult at times to tell without knowing the specific scheme whether it was the center's fault or the guard's fault. I put it on all middle three of those guys where sometimes there's just flat out too many miscommunications.
There was time, though, earlier in his career where you would see him make up for the woeful inadequacies of the guys to his left and to his right, where he would be dropping back and it would like his peripheral vision would catch that either Xavier Suafilo or whoever else was next to him, Jeff Allen, was butchering a play, yeah, and he would somehow slide over and actually take care of it. And
yes, scavenger.
And it just doesn't feel like that's happening anymore. And this is just a further reminder, guys, that there are few, if any, things to compliment offensive line coach Mike Devlin for. I mean, Xavier Suafilo stunk here. He's playing in Dallas. Is he playing well in Dallas? I don't know, but he's playing at the very least well enough for that Cowboys offensive line to have him out there. You had Jeff Allen here. He got a job in the middle of the year in Kansas City. He started games in Kansas City this past season. Ben Jones has been a consistent starter. He's rated higher on Pro Football Focus than Nick Martin, who, again, a second-round pick that you invested in. This is this isn't like one of your fill-ins, like Kendall Lamb.
For when we complain, when people complain about how come they haven't invested in the offensive line, like that would be one guy you could point to that, hey, they've spent a second-round pick there. If they had just like kept Dwayne Brown around, and they spent money. Look, they spent money on a left guard and a right guard, and for the most part, across the board, they've all got pretty sloppy footwork. They don't work well in conjunction together. They do at times, but then it's a game-to-game situation. The one thing I would say is that with continuity, hopefully that gets a lot better this year, because the center and the two guards working together and then the guards and the two tackles working together, there is a whole lot of teamwork, and it requires time in a system to get that cohesion and get that communication. I would like to see them take a big step forward this year. Even if they shuffle one or two guys in, the continuity makes a difference. Health between the guards makes a difference. We've talked about this before. I don't know why Texans guards all of a sudden turn into fragile porcelain dolls when they play for the Texans, but there's something about, particularly like low, and it's always an ankle. Every damn time with an ankle, like these guys have the ankles of basketball players out there trying to stop bull rushes, but just a little bit of health would help a lot too.
We're discussing the fact that Nick Martin is somehow the fifth rated center in a 4-team division. Here's what I'm about on Nick Martin. I think that they're not really in a great situation in that he is going into year 4, so usually it's contract time. I don't expect Nick Martin to get a new deal this offseason, although I've been surprised before. They needed him to play better because I think they have too many needs to fill, like, a center, to fill this void if they indeed felt like it was a void. The bottom line is, if they are to become the offensive line that we hope, this has to happen. He has to get better.
The one thing I'll say about center is that good centers generally are, the thing that they're best at is feeding their guards, you know, working in conjunction with their guards. So a center can only be as good as his relationship with his guards next to him. I think that this ranking doesn't quite tell the whole story.
What do you mean by feeding the guard?
Okay, like a lot of times, like you're not expected to single block a lot of guys as a center. You know, at times you have to, but more than anything, a lot of times you're, especially in pass protection, you're working in conjunction with an offensive guard. So it's getting the right chip or the right angle on a guy and letting the guard overtake him in the run game. In the pass game, you're usually part of a double team. At times you have to single block. But it's a lot of that. And if that, like, if you go back to Mark Stepnoski, when Mark Stepnoski was here for the Oilers and then for the Cowboys, and he played with the Titans as well when they were the Titans, like he weighed like 255 pounds and he wasn't dominating people individually. What he was really good at was working with Bruce Matthews and then whoever else they had working on the other side at various times. And I don't think Nick Martin alongside those two guards has really developed that teamwork yet. And I don't know if that's a Mike Devlin issue. I don't know if that's a talent issue there. Brandon Brooks, we need to bring this up. We always say, like, well, who actually got better while playing with the Texans? Brandon Brooks was a good guard when he was here.
I agree.
The question becomes, okay, why did Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith not think it was worth retaining? You know who's made as much money as Brandon Brooks over the last few years? Jeff Allen. Jeff Allen made almost as much money while he was with the Texans as Brandon Brooks would have made with his new contract with the Eagles. So, like, that's what you have to figure out. Why the hell was Jeff Allen worth only a few million dollars less than Brandon Brooks, who's off being an all-pro caliber performer with the Eagles?
And you've said this so many times with Reno Giacomini, Seth. They have a perception, I think, of toughness with Jeff Allen, who was lauded as some really tough offensive lineman, and they thought that Brandon Brooks wasn't a tough player because Brandon Brooks, they did not understand all that Brandon Brooks was dealing with when he was with the Texans, which were anxiety issues and things of that nature.
They'd rather have a Reno Giacomini that acts like a tough guy after the whistle than to have a genuine tough guy who might have anxiety issues in Brandon Brooks. That's the problem. That's why I have an issue with that. I have an issue with the way Bill O'Brien judges toughness. I don't think he gets it.